Welcome to Card Knock Life. I'm Corey, and here's Daryl.
What up?
We are back at you with some more information about cardboard.
Same stuff we always do, nothing new.
Same stuff we always do, lots of complaining about... No, I'm just kidding. I think today's mostly positive. I think we've got majority positivity, and I've got a little bit of rambling to do, but...
You've got some complaining, but we might not get to it on this episode, so let's save the people.
All right, we might spare you, so... Anyways, the good news, let's start with the good news. We've got, like, the first week of big events for Standard the new set in. And this set has, I would say, exceeded my expectations for the impact on the format. Would you say so, Daryl?
I mean, I'm just going to say it this way. I'm going to look at the Star City Games Standard Classic.
Yeah, look at the Classic. The team.
I'm just going to make the statement that, you know, 4 weeks ago before the ban of Aether Retrieval, however long ago it was, 40% of the meta was Aether Retrieval.
Yeah.
Eight different decks in the top eight right now.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's insane.
Is it eight different decks, really?
Yeah, it's literally eight. Seven. Two blue-red control decks. Darn it. I thought it was eight different decks. My bad.
I mean, like, two zombies decks are different kinds, but yeah, for the most part, yeah.
Right. Yeah, like... Legitimately, it could have been eight different decks of Brokers if Breakers went differently, probably. Because ninth place was Green-Black Energy, 11th place was Mardu Vehicles, you know, there's Green Red Pummeler in 12th, 13th, Team Energy in 14th. I'm going to bet that probably 1st through 5th was solid, and the rest of this was all Breakers. So, like, legitimately, there could have been 8 different decks at the top 8.
Let me ask you something. Just as a side note here, these A's next to the names, what's up with this? I've seen this lately. This A with the little, like, accent over it. Like, for
I'm
example,
not sure.
Stack, is that just, like, a typo, or does that mean?
I think it's just a typo.
Okay, because that's showed up on a lot of lists lately.
I think it's just a typo.
Okay, and it's coming from either Star City Games. I think it's coming from the Star City Games website when they post their standings. And basically, Goldfish just like blindly like copies it over. I don't know if it means something. Tell us, because I would very much like to know. But Black Zombies in fourth place has a little A with what I would call a circumflex, the French accent over top of it. And I don't know if that means something, like.
So,
but this looks like a Black Blue Zombies deck to me.
It is a Black Blue Zombies deck. It's listed as Mono Black Zombies on Star City's website with the weird thing. I don't know why.
I don't know. Okay. There is a Mono Black Zombies in 6th. You're not looking at that one, are you?
No, I'm looking at the 4th place one that has the weird inflection.
Alright, well, anyways, let's start with this classic. I mean, we kind of already did, but let's start with the classic. Mono Red Aggro won the day. There has been quite a bit of Mono Red Aggro. I don't think that any one deck is kind of, like, seeping up to the forefront of Standard at this point, which is really good to see. This Mono Red Aggro deck is heavily represented, but it, like, I was expecting one of these decks to just, like, be, like, the dominant force this weekend.
Dude. But do you know why?
Why?
Do you know why the Mono Red deck is heavily represented?
Because it's
$87.
Because it's cheap, but because it's early in a new format and it's aggressive.
Absolutely.
But yeah, it was cheap. I mean, right now you're paying $8 for a playset of Beaumont Couriers, which is like the reason I'm not playing this deck. I looked at the price tag and I was thinking, wow, this would be cheap to throw together. But like cards like that, I certainly don't want to pay $2 for a freaking Raging Goblin.
Beaumont Courier? Nah.
There are some bad cards. But Hazoreth the Fervent has ticked up from like $3 or $4 to like $6 now as a result of this. And Earthshaker Kenra is like a $5 card now as well. So there's definitely some rise in that. I'm looking at the online prices, of course. Paper is quite a bit cheaper.
I was looking at the paper price and I'm like, I feel like this is fine.
I'm sorry.
Earthshaker Kenra is only $5 because it hasn't been opened a lot on Moto. It's the only thing, like.
Yeah. But, definitely an interesting deck. These basically just mono red dudes get in there.
Yeah.
A Braid is a big boon to this deck. This guy doesn't play much Braid in the main deck. Actually, he's got one.
Yeah.
He's got Collective Defiance in the main deck, which is pretty cool. And also these decks get to play deserts, like the Ramanop Ruins, which gives these decks a little bit of reach, which is really sweet, because in a lot of cases, your dudes just kind of like run out of gas after a while, and they've got big blockers for things like, you know, your Village Messenger or your Falconwrath Gorger, and you just can't get your last few points of damage in. But Ramanop Ruins plus Sunscorched Desert can kind of pair up for those last few points that will, you know, finish the game off. It's pretty cool. Not negligible. You can sacrifice the Sunscorched Desert to the ruins.
Yeah, I mean, you basically have lightning bolts in your lands with the Sunscorched Desert. Like, you ping them, and then you get to them with the desert. So, I mean, that's basically a lightning bolt for your lands. That's pretty strong.
I love Karyzev's Expertise. I think that's a sweet sideboard card.
It's a very good sideboard card.
And then a lot of them are playing Akum Firebird, which is cool, too, and then an extra land in the sideboard. That guy seems pretty fun.
Yeah, good for the long games.
Yeah. Anyways, like I said, lots of those mono-red aggros, just slight variations on that, but for the most part, we've got the same kind of base of creatures. Hazoret is a beating. We've talked about this before. That guy is really tough to deal with. And in these decks, I can tell that he would really, really shine with the whole, like, being hellbent quickly. And, man, very tough to deal with.
Yeah, people are going to have a bad time facing that guy now.
Yeah. What did the Monument
For all deck, of Standard. What like, all, the whole time is the same.
The second place Monument deck, what did this get from the new set? Not much. Shafet Dunes.
Shafet Dunes. Yeah, not from our, no. Nothing really from our.
He's got Nimble Obstructionist in the sideboard.
And, yeah, that's about it. Sunscourge Champion, the Eternalized Creature.
Yeah. So, that's kind of cool. Sunscourge Champion is a really really big life gainer. It's one of the cheapest Eternalized costs that you've got on a creature. It's 4 and discard a card. And that's some pretty significant life gain there.
Yeah, I mean, seriously, though, like, discarding a land to gain 4 life against an aggro deck is really good. So, like...
Oh, yeah.
No complaints here.
Yeah, this deck... I think he's actually suffered a little bit from the new set coming out. This was probably the most played deck before Hour of Devastation, and I don't know if people are just interested in playing new cards or what, but I think maybe the presence of like these big control decks with like Nicol Bolas and things like that, and like playing like Sweltering Suns and like sweepers, maybe has made the white blue Monument deck like a little less potent.
I think a lot of it is like the fact that there are small creatures in the meta. Because you see, this Monument deck's playing 3 Dusk Dawn, and oftentimes the front half of Dusk won't do much if you're playing against like a small aggressive deck. You usually have these 4 bananas in your deck that don't do anything, you know?
Ham sandwiches?
No, bananas. Ham sandwiches are actually kind of tasty.
Oh, okay. This
would be your go-to. Oh, no. Ham sandwiches, it means that they're irrelevant. Bananas mean that they're completely useless.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, very different.
Bananas provide some potassium.
That's fair.
At least. We got Green-Red Ramp in third place. This is a cool deck. I put together I reassembled my Pummeler deck, basically, online because it was like super cheap to build, just to get some standard experience before the cast because I wanted to kind of see what was out there and how these decks played out.
Dude, I have most of the cards for this deck.
And yeah, I played against this Green-Red Ramp deck. This is pretty similar to the Green-Red Ramp deck of days past. I don't know if you remember back in the day, there was a Green-Red Ramp deck that featured like the Shrine of the Forsaken Gods and
Sanctum of Ulamog
to like Ulamog and Worldbreaker.
Yeah, I remember that.
And this is it all over again. This is like a much more fun version of it because it gets to play Hour of Devastation and Hour of Promise, which, oh my god, Hour of Promise is insane. That card does everything you want in this deck.
So here's my thing about this deck.
Yeah.
It doesn't really do a good job triggering Traverse the Uvenwald.
It doesn't?
Not really, like...
Walking Ballista's artifact and creature in one.
Oh, yeah, Walking Ballister, that's where it's at. I was like, how does it trigger...
Sorcery, instant...
Yeah, so Sorcery Instant, I saw. It was Walking Ballister.
I think that's the big one. Walking Ballista is like a perfect fit in this deck. And I do believe the old ramp decks played Hangerback Walker when that guy was around.
Yeah, it was Walking Ballista. Yeah.
Which
That was the thing I missed.
Don't forget that Walking Ballista can also trigger like the Sanctum of Ugin. The cost can be reduced by Shrine of the Forsaken Gods. It really is like it's all you want in this deck and more.
This deck, so, like, originally my issue with this deck was that it only had, like, 5-6 threats, really? Plus 2 Chandra. But, I mean, I guess between, like, Traverse the Uvenwald and Sheltered Thicket and Matter Reshaper, I guess you can get them. All right, I can get behind it.
Not negligible either. You get 4 power worth of zombies out of Our Promise. So it's a ramp spell that gives you, like, a pretty sizable chunk of damage. And that usually is follow, you know, like, that card you play following...
Wait, that gives you zombies?
Sweltering Suns. Yeah, man. If you have... Okay, search the library for 2 lands, put them on the battlefield, tapped. Then, if you control 3 or more deserts, create 2 zombies.
Okay, so I'm going to be honest. I didn't even read the rest of the text on this card. I just thought it was... Basically, in my head, when I was playing this card mentally in Standard, I was just like... Oh, this card just reads, go get 2 Shrine of the Forsaken Gods, put them in a play tab. I didn't even realize that this card made zombies if you had deserts. Holy crap.
Yeah, if you're in top deck mode and you're not drawing creatures off the top of your deck, you just have a bunch of basic lands in play, you draw an Hour of Promise, that Hour of Promise could easily be like, okay, we're going to get 2, like, Ramanop Ruins and, like, put 2 zombies
and,
in
and
play.
2 zombies.
And that's, like, 8 damage out of nowhere, you know?
Yeah, just start bodying your opponent. Okay, I'm in now. Like, you've convinced me that this deck does not need more threats. Like, I did not realize that Hour of Promise made zombies. Oh, my God. I feel like the dumbest human. Maybe I should just...
Reality Smashers.
Maybe I...
On the sideboard. Oh, it's so good.
Maybe I should just read the cards that I'm seeing in the deck. Start making judgments.
Yeah, Daryl.
Shut up, Corey.
This one is pretty damn cool. I think I'm pretty close to this one in paper. If there's one that I'm going to play in paper, I'd have to put this guy together. But holy cow, some of these cards are damn expensive. Anyways, we'll go on here. We don't want to get too caught in the green-red ramp land because there's much more spice in the standard world. Black-blue zombies in fourth place. Scarab God, Gisa and Giralf, however you want to say it. I don't know which G's are hard and soft.
Gisa and Giralf.
They're made up words anyway.
Whatever.
We get to make
boat noises.
Yeah, we do.
Yes, we get to make barge noises. Awesome. Sky Sovereign Council flagship in the sideboard. That makes me happy. I don't know. On a totally unrelated level, like.
Yeah, I don't know. There's not much to say about this one. It's just a zombie deck that splashes blue for those.
For the good cards. Yep, yeah, you're right.
Scarab God seems pretty awesome.
That card is bananas. I played against an EDH, and it's El Busto. Like.
I've seen a lot of people go to this, and like, it doesn't seem like the type of thing that you'd really need to splash for, but apparently the incentive is worthwhile because. I mean, that's really the only thing that they're doing it for, you know? Like, it's certainly not... They're not in blue for Gisa and Giralf.
Yeah, so here's the thing about the Scarab God. It lets you beat the first sweeper.
Mm-hmm.
So the first sweeper comes down on 4. Like, just say it's turn 4.
Yeah.
And then you play the Scarab God on turn 5. And if you untap, you get to make a 4-4 zombie. That might be a Crypt Breaker or a Diagraph Colossus or a Lord of the Accursed. And so you get to make a random 4-4. And then you start to get to scry your way through your deck. So the only problem... Oh, your opponents lose life, so it gives you additional reach. So as you generate more zombies with the Scarab God, your opponents lose more and more life. So it's reach that you can beat them without the combat step when the boards get jumped up. So there's a lot to like there.
Yeah, that's pretty damn good. I can see that. The impact is as soon as you untap, you got the upkeep, you're going to be dealing them damage, and then you scry X for the zombies. I guess I didn't even read that portion of the card. That is...
Corey.
This does a lot.
Yeah, Corey, read the card. Yeah.
But
no.
Beyond that, it exiles a creature card from an opponent's graveyard as well as yours. Against, like... a green-black Delirium-style deck where they have, like, one copy of the Spider in their graveyard and you want to exile that. Ishkanagraph Riddle, yeah.
Well, I mean, you also can do it with, like, an Ulamog or something if you can beat the first Ulamog.
Sure.
I mean, or you can make them discard I don't know. I'm just, these are statements I'm making. Actually, you can do it with Dark Salvation.
You can do it with Dark Salvation, or you can do it with three Grasp of Darknesses. All three of them.
Yeah. But, I mean, if you somehow come around to a way where you beat into a log or an Ishkana or something with a high value trigger, you can exile it. It also, like, puts your opponent in a spot like if they're playing Monument and you've killed their spell quellers.
Yeah.
That you have counter spells in your graveyard and instant speed for their stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, sure.
Because you can exile their quellers, make a 4/4 queller, and then, like, counter the thing.
Yeah, man.
So. Cool. All pretty reasonable stuff there.
All right, let's look at the first blue-red control deck, which is actually a Grixis control deck with a really light splash for one Nicol Bolas in the main.
Yes.
That's a lot of black lands for that guy. All of those black lands happen to be, well, not all of them. There's one Sunken Hollow and then four Aether Hub, but there are lots of them that are cycling lands, so the drawback is not huge because you just may want to play these cycling lands anyway in a deck like this.
You do.
So it's pretty cool. Nicol Bolas is like really a great finisher in these guys. It's the type of card that it's like when you're playing control and like you tap out for something, like it better be like really damn good, you know? Because you're just basically
Nicol Bolas.
Yeah, yeah. I think he is. I think he is really good.
I think Nicol Bolas beats the brakes off your opponent. Like, I think it's great.
Yeah. So I think that he's probably what the blue red control decks needed.
Yeah.
And also, Aura of Devastation makes a pretty big difference for them too. Supreme Will as well is really effective.
Yeah, like
technology here.
Plus the kind of thing where like if you're playing against an aggressive deck that doesn't have haste, like being able to tap out for Nicol Bolas and they flood the board and then you can Aura of Devastation and not kill your Planeswalker.
Mm-hmm.
And hold up counter magic is just that's a lot of stuff happening.
Yeah, it does say non Bolas Planeswalker. You took that into account, right?
Yes, that's why I said not kill your Planeswalker.
Okay, I thought you meant just because he's 7 loyalty, he just survives it. But yeah, that's one weird clause where it's like, oh yeah, you never really pay attention to that until that one random time where it just happens to be relevant. Because most of the time when you got a Nicol Bolas, you just like win the game anyway. You probably don't have to be doing too much Aura of Devastation. But there will be a time where it comes around and you're like, oh, cool, this is even better than I thought.
Yeah, perfect. Exactly what I wanted.
That really does drive the nail in the coffin there when you're casting Aura of Devastation with a Nicol on the table.
Yeah, I think you can just call it a day if that's what's happening.
Now against opposing Bolas.
Not great.
Then we're in trouble. You better count those bastards. All right, let's move on here.
Mono Black Zombies, not much to see here. We'll
talk about that one. Is there anything new? Is that just playing deserts?
They're just playing deserts.
Yeah, Ifnir Deadlands puts 2 -1/-1 counters on a creature. I think this one is arguably the most effective one. The red one's obviously really good in the decks that you see it played. But this one, like in a vacuum, like on its own, like I think I would want, you know, beyond any one of the other ones in the cycle. That's pretty good. That's pretty damn good.
I agree.
But I don't know. That may not even be worth saying. but I guess like maybe for limited purposes, like it's pretty damn effective. It's just
yes, it is. Creature.
These deserts are awesome. I had no idea.
I'm surprised.
This big of an
impact. I'm surprised to see that people that are playing all the deserts not have the Tormach Group desert in their sideboard.
Yeah.
Especially in the ramp deck that can go any desert, I'm surprised they don't have like a Tormod's Grip desert as a tutor target.
Right. Yeah. There's maybe there's just not enough incentive to run Graveyard Hate right now. Though I have seen some Croak of Condemnation. Like that last deck had it in the sideboard.
Yeah. I mean, we're getting ready to get to the deck that is your incentive.
Yeah. So eventually that could be, it could be time for that.
Yeah.
And then I'm also wondering when Hostile Desert, I think it is, the one that makes the 3/4 when you exile a land from your graveyard.
Yeah.
That card's bound to be played at some point. I don't know how many deserts or what kind of desert strategy is going to like make that plausible, but I think that that card probably has a place in a deck that's going to run lands like this. There's also Evolving Wilds in the format, too.
Yep.
Anyways, so we'll go on. In the deck that you're talking about, White, blue.
Blue, white, God, Pharaoh's Gift.
Yeah.
This is something else. I'm going to go through this one because it's super different and it only exists because of new cards. So, 3 Mausoleum Wanderer, 4 Minister of Inquiries, which, when it enters the battlefield, you get 2 energy. Tap it, pay an energy, target player mills 3. 4th Raven Inspector, 4 Champion of the Wits, which is the new, enters the battlefield, draw cards equal with power, discard 2 with Eternal Eyes. 4 Angel Invention, 3 Cataclysmic Gear Hulk, 4 Strategic Planning, 4 Refurbish, which is return target artifact from your graveyard to the battlefield. 4 Gate to the Afterlife, which is whenever a non-token creature you control dies, you gain a life. Then you may draw a card. If you do, discard a card. And then pay 2 mana, sacrifice Gate to the Afterlife, search your graveyard, hand, or library for a card named God Pharaoh's Gift and put it onto the battlefield. If you search your library this way, shuffle it. Activate this ability only if there are 6 or more creatures in your graveyard. And then God Pharaoh's Gift is the new 7 mana artifact. At the beginning of combat on each of your turns, you may exile a creature card from your graveyard. If you do, gain a token that's a copy of that card. It's a 4/4 black zombie, gains haste till end of turn.
This deck's crazy. On our site, we've got a card Knock Life Plays right now. I recorded of Abzan tokens.
Yeah.
Spoiler alert, that deck is garbage, and I lost. I was 1-4 in the league with it, but I did want to show it off because it's interesting, to say the least.
Yeah.
But it's just really bad right now. But I did play against a couple of really interesting decks, so it's worth watching maybe to see like the decks I played against. One of the decks was not white-blue God Pharaoh's Gift, but it was blue-red God Pharaoh Gifts. That was
really
pretty similar to this one. Obviously, Champion of Wits is a good fit in there. For red, it just had like a lot of one-ofs. One of the things was like the dude that comes into play and deals 3 damage to all the creatures in play.
Yeah.
I had like some Glory Bringers and things like that. It was okay. It was crazy. It was a nutso deck. So I was not at all surprised to see a God Pharaoh's Gift deck do well in this tournament, but I was a little shocked to see it in the top 8. So that's really cool. I think we're going to see more of this going forward.
I think the scary part is really the sideboard plan. That like you can strategic planning on turn 2 and set up turn 4 Refurbish into God Pharaoh's Gift main phase 1, bring back Void Winnower, and just have a 4/4 hasty token that doesn't leave the battlefield that makes your opponents not be able to play even spells. Mm-hmm. Like that's a really hard to beat sideboard plan.
Yeah, Void Winnower, I chuckled at that a little bit. I think that's funny. They can't even so early on.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, like, and you have so many enablers between, like, Minister of Inquiries and Strategic Planning and Champion of Wits. But, like, it's not unreasonable to get a turn 4 Refurbish and, like, lock them out of the game like that.
Yeah, this deck does it a little differently with the Refurbish plan and the Strategic Planning, obviously, than the blue-red version. Gate to the Afterlife is a really real way to get to God Pharaoh's Gift.
Another turn four way to do it.
It can take it out of your graveyard.
Yeah.
So if you discard it to a Champion of Wits, you can put it into play from your graveyard. Now, let's give the credit where it's due. Andrew Lucas plays with this deck, but this is 3 cents different from Olivetti's deck on 7/21, just 2 days before it. So he basically just played this guy's list and made one change to the sideboard. Yeah. Olivetti, by the way, is the officer from the Swiss Guard in Guys and Demons. If you've ever read that book. Probably not the same one. Anyways, I think that once people started drafting this set, they maybe discovered the power of some of these cards that kind of flew under the radar during the spoiler season, and that is credit to some good design. I have to like give credit where it's due because we kind of poo-pooed on this set a lot. I did a lot. I'll take honest to that.
Yeah.
But cards like Champion of Wits and God Pharaoh's Gift were not extremely obvious as like really powerful like constructed cards, but they freaking are. They are really, really powerful. And when in the last couple weeks, I've been drafting to prepare for. We're going to GP Indy at the end of August.
Nice.
And so I've been playing a little bit of Limited to prepare for that. And every time I've seen a God Pharaoh's Gift come out, I just lost. The game is over. That is the most unbeatable card in Limited. It is insanely good.
So the difference, I'm going to just tell you, because you said there was a 3-cent difference. The difference was minus one Fragmentize, plus one Forsake the Worldly. So he went for the Exile, Cyclable, Artifact or Enchantment removal so, instead of a second Fragmentize.
So it's the same function, it's just a different version.
Yeah, but 74, 75 are the same.
All right, yeah. So there you go. This is Olivetti's deck then.
Yes.
Anyways, this is cool. Like I said, God Pharaoh's Gift is cool. I think that the point I'm trying to make is just this is a set that really did a good job of making cards that were not obviously going to be really impactful in Standard that are actually. And so we're
going to see a lot. So I think this is definitely one on us because we didn't evaluate these two cards, Gate to the Afterlife and God Pharaoh's Gift, as something that was doable. But we also didn't put together all the pieces of all the things that were available to us.
Yeah.
Between, Master of Inquiries and Champion of Wits and Strategic Planning. And then the two in a blue the one in a blue desert that mills for. We didn't put all these pieces together to be able to recognize that we might be idiots and that this might just be insane.
Well, and the thing is, too, that Champion of Wits, is what makes this possible too. I don't think that on their own, God Pharaoh's Gift and Get to the Afterlife really would be nearly as effective without a card that just straight up Faithless Loots when it comes into play and does even more than that when it gets eternalized.
Yeah,
just functions so perfectly well with this combo. But yeah, that card I think flew under a lot of people's radar and it's making a big impact not only in this deck but in some of the Emerge decks and some of the Delirium decks. Card's nuts. It's really really good. So, okay, we better move on.
Team Constructed?
Was that that was 7th place, and then 8th place?
I don't even remember.
It's Blue-Red Control. So, yeah, we don't need to talk about that. That's another new one. There. Before we move on, though, there are a couple Pummeler decks in 12th and 13th. There is a Teemer Energy in 14th. Those are decks that didn't make the top 8, but they have placed quite a bit in league results and things like that.
Salute the Voice of Dissent.
And then Mardu Vehicles in 11th.
Yeah, I mean, all totally.
That's a deck.
Hey, you know how we poo-pooed on Samuth Tested? One sideboard of the green-red Pummeler deck. Womp, womp.
Is that the... I've seen both Samuths played in these decks, actually.
Yeah, the really bad Planeswalker, which blows my mind.
Actually, this one is the one that has both of them. It's got this one's got the legendary creature Samuth as well.
Yeah, I'm not 100% sure about the legendary creature Samuth is in this deck.
Well, this is just a weird-ass deck. This is not a stock green-red Pummeler deck.
Oh, there's a Samuth in the main board, too! Jesus!
As is there a Vizier of the Menagerie?
there's only 19 creatures. Why is there a Vizier of the Menagerie? That doesn't even make sense. Alright, I'm just going to close this deck now.
Alright.
Team Constructed. Take a look at Standard, Mono Red Aggro, Green Red Ramp, Teemer Energy, 4-color Merge. I kind of look at that. Everything else pretty straightforward. Stuff we've already talked about. Soul Tide Delirium down here, 25th. Let's take a look at that. All we're doing the Standard life.
Yeah, Soul Tide
4-color Emerge.
This deck's pretty cool. This has got the Scarab God in it.
Yeah, 4-color Emerge, nothing new really. It's just trying to leverage Scapegoat Scavenger, Prize of Amalgam, and Haunted Dead to loop a bunch of dudes and put stuff out to Elder Deep Fiend, your opponent. Nothing really jumps off the page to me there. Soul-Tide Delirium.
What the biggest takeaway is from this whole event, I think, because you can look at all these results, but they're so inbred because of the team factor.
Yeah. There's a lot of cool stuff going on in Standard is what I take away from it.
There is a lot of cool stuff going on in Standard. Again, it's how much information can you pull from that, though?
Yeah.
But look at the Modern. We got first through eighth place. We got Bant Company, Grixis Death Shadow, Burn, Grixis Death Shadow, Burn, Grixis Death Shadow, Grixis Death Shadow, and Jeskai Control.
You trying to tell me something here?
I don't know. I'm not sure if I should be concerned at this point or what. This is not too far off from the Modern Open, the Modern Classic, either.
Actually, the Modern Classic was pretty diverse.
Was it?
Yeah, Affinity, Tribal Flames. Nope, Affinity, Tribal Flames, Zoo, Grixis Delver, Black-Green Midrange, Jeskai control, red, green, land destruction, affinity, blue, white control, burn, counters company, lantern, amulet titan, double elves, human company.
Yeah, you're totally right.
And Mardudu reanimator.
Yeah, so at least this this team constructed, like I said, I don't know how much information you can get from this, but knowing that the top eight is just, like, so, like, drenched in Grixis Death Shadow, what does that tell you? Is it just, like,
when I mean, it's...
Yeah.
It doesn't bear good for Grixis Death Shadow, I'll say that much.
No.
It's the way I feel about it, at least. I could be wrong. But it doesn't look promising for our hero, Grixis Death Shadow.
Okay.
All right.
The classic. Do you want to move on to the classic? Look at the classic.
Yeah, that had some sweet ones in it.
The team event was cool. I like, you know, there's not much to talk about there other than it was cool.
Yeah, it's a team event. Team events are cool.
The classic is cool though. Affinity one. I don't know if there's anything new in that deck that we really need to cover.
I haven't looked at it. Tribal Flame Zoo. Death Shadow. Oh, it's just Death Shadow Zoo with Tribal Flames.
Yeah. Yeah, why did it take us so long to try that?
I don't know, but it looks freaking great. There's a Griffin's Boon in the deck to throw your Tarmogoyfs into the air. Some Boros Charms from Dismembers. Some Lightning Bolts. A Might of Alara. 4 Might of Alara. So it's Tribal Flames, but it's Giant Growth. So your guy gets +5/+5 with 4 mana. 4 Tribal Flames, and then a Claim to Fame.
Oh, and by the way, we do have the Breeding Pool here and the Steam Vents, just in case you want to shock for the blue. Just say all 5 colors. But we don't have
Yeah, that's why it's Tribal Flames. That's why it's Tribal Flames, Zoo.
Oh, there is Rise and Fall on the sideboard.
Yeah, Rise and Fall on the sideboard. I'm surprised there's not more Claim to Fames. And playing Might of Alara, I'm also surprised there's no Team or Battle Rage.
Yeah, a lot of times they put them in the sideboard, but that is a lot of non-creatures that you're running then in that case.
Yeah, I mean, all of these things are completely reasonable. These are all things I noticed that I would be interested in.
Griff's Boon is pretty cool.
Griff's Boon is just
put that on Death Shadow and
throw my Death Shadow into the sky, give it a little bit of Bite of Alara, and hit you with Tribal Flames. See you later. Alright, that's pretty cool. Black Green Midrange by Saul Maka. Nothing particularly exciting here, just black cards with green cards. Yeah, I was hoping there would be something exciting. Tribal Flame Zoo, we already talked about. Nothing particularly exciting other than those. Legacy? Shall we Legacy?
Well, there was,
Oh, something you want to talk about?
There was something I want to talk about. Maybe
it was
the Honors Company deck?
Or was it the Mardu Reanimator deck?
No, it wasn't this Counters Company deck. It must have been in the team portion, but we did see, talking about new cards making an impact in Modern, there was a green-white company deck that was playing the Ramanop Excavator, which is the Crucible Worlds guy.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
So let me hop back to that really quick. I forgot to cover that when we were there.
Yeah, it's probably Todd Anderson. You're not Todd Anderson, Todd Stevens.
Yeah, it was.
Knowing his love of all things. Yep, it is Todd Stevens, Randon. First place, Ron Up Excavator, 4 Ghost Quarter, getcha.
Yeah, isn't
that cool? Two Azusa, Jesus Christ. I'm surprised he didn't go all the way in for like Corsair. Oh, he didn't go for Corsair. Jeez, alright, I'm done here. I'm just going to go home and retire. Yeah.
Yeah.
He's got Corsair. 3 Rotlop.
But it's like, it's just green white.
Yeah, it's green white. I think there's like a blue land somewhere. Nope, there is no blue. It's just green white. Excellent.
Yeah.
Oh my, though.
It's bent because he's got Noble Hierarch, and then he plays Engineering Explosives in the sideboard.
Okay.
So he can get the blue. But he does have Ramanop Excavator in
Triple Ramanop Excavator in my Modern deck.
Whisperwood Elemental on the sideboard as well.
Whisperwood Elemental is a very good Magic card.
It is, yeah. He doesn't see a lot of play, but
I don't know if you know this, but it is a very good Magic card. I'm just imagining, like, using Ramanop Excavator plus Azusa plus Horizon Canopy and just drawing a gazillion cards. That's exciting. that's something I want to be doing. Like, yeah.
All right, cool. So before we lose too much focus here, let's talk Legacy. I'm sorry to divert back to the team
concern. No, you're good. So Legacy Classic, we got Infect, Sultai Death Shadow, which I'm going to go over. Lands, Black Green Turbo Depths, a couple Storm decks, Grixis Delver, Sneak Attack, and then some various other pretty standard decks. I'll take a look at the Infect deck as the winner and see if there's anything special coming up with these top 8 decks. But the real interesting thing that I'm going to talk about after I get done doing a quick peruse here, Dissenter's Deliverance coming in hot in the Infect deck on the sideboard.
Yeah, one.
Let's see, lands. Anything fancy here? Nothing fancy out of the lands deck.
In Legacy, is Sultai Death Shadow, is that like the Death Shadow of choice, or is that even really a deck?
There's not a Death Shadow deck in Legacy, really.
So this is just kind of a flash in the pan.
Maybe. This is just Justin Parnell, the commander versus host du jour, playing a brew of his in this tournament. And it's pretty sweet, I'm going to be honest.
Yeah, I have seen a Sultai Death Shadow deck in Legacy before, and I was interested in playing it.
I haven't seen it, so I'm gonna run this down, and then we can chat about it if you'd like.
Okay.
4 Death Shadow, 4 Death Rite, 4 Delver, 2 Gurmag Angler, a Breeding Pool, 2 Flooded Strand, 2 Mysterian Forest, 2 Polluted Delta, 2 Scalding Tarn, a Trop, an Underground Sea, 4 Wasteland, or 2 Underground Seas, sorry, 4 Wasteland, 2 Watery Grave, 4 Brainstorm, 4 Days, 2 Dismember, 4 Force of Will, 2 Snuff Out, and that's one that our listeners might not know. It's if you control a swamp, you can pay 4 life rather than paying Snuff Out's cost, and then destroy target non-black creature, it can't be regenerated. 4 Probe, 4 Ponder, 4 Thoughtseize, and then the sideboard, a Pineal, 2 Dread of Night, which gives all white creatures -1/-1 for Death of Taxes matchups. A Sylvan Library, an Abrupt Decay, a Ceremonious Rejection, a Diabolic Edict, a Fatal Push, 2 Flusterstorm, a Golgari Charm, 2 Surgical Extraction, a Liliana, the Last Hope, and a Toxic Deluge.
So many of these cards have alternate costs in the main deck where they're just free.
Yes.
And they just cost life.
Yes, that's the thing, is that like with Death Shadow and Legacy, you could just play a 3/3 Death Shadow on turn 1. Because you could just go like Gataxian Probe, snuff out a creature, fetch Shock, mm-hmm. and what was that, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. You could play a Death Shadow for 2, but as a 2/2, I think. Yeah, because you're at 11.
Yeah.
So you could play Death Shadow as a 2/2.
That's funny. They didn't play so, Shocks like, just because like the life loss when...
Loss is relevant. Yeah. Life loss is useful, so they play shock lands instead
of
like
if it was a deck,
it would play 2 Trop and 4 Underground Sea. But since it's not, it's playing 2 Water Grave and a Breeding Pool, and then 2 Underground Sea and a Trop. Because there are situations where you want to be able to fetch a non-pain source that comes with land tap. So that's how the lands ended up being split there. But this deck looks sweet between 2 Dismember and 2 Snuff Out. Like, you've got plenty of ammo to, like, reduce your life total to not that high.
Oh, yeah. That's crazy. And then you got Force of Will to back everything up and, like, ensure that you're going to get in there.
Force of Will days to protect all your stuff.
If only you could play Deathrite Shaman in Modern.
We've already done that, and it's not really acceptable.
We've already been there. Okay.
We were there, and it was not acceptable. And I would not like to go back there. Although, to be fair, talk about Modern ban list, I do think that they can unban Blood Raid Elf now. Because one of the more broken things you could do with Blood Raid Elf was Armageddon people, and that's not a thing you can do anymore. So, all that aside. But yeah, that's the sweet Legacy deck. I might have to build this. I think I have to get Days. I think that's the only card I don't own. Maybe some Dreadanites. But I think I have the rest of these cards. Might try this one. I don't know.
Yeah,
I tried the Jeskai Dragons deck, and the update, that deck was not even worth showing people. It was muy bad. Not being able to play Path of Exile in your white deck with Blood Moon is really...
You were so excited about it. Oust doesn't do it, huh?
Oust does not do it. You need an instant speed removal spell that actually gets rid of the creature instead of giving them a chance to draw it.
Okay.
Like, if you could play Oust in response to their fetch lands, like if it was an instant, then it would be playable. But, like, it's just not as bad.
Yeah.
It's so bad. Well, all right. So nothing really else to report from this Legacy Open. Did we want to try and continue to jump and jive through all of our other stuff here? We got some time?
Yeah, let's do it. It's been a while since we just, like, jammed through deck lists for a while, and it feels good to do that, especially after a new set comes out. There's all sorts of excitement to go through, so.
Oh, absolutely. I agree. But let's talk Pro Tour.
Yeah.
So, I know the Pro Tour is happening this weekend. We're going to go through some of the announcements for the future Pro Tours, and then we can talk about, like, stuff we expect to see at the Pro Tour, like, what we expect to win the event, et cetera. So Pro Tour schedule for next year is a big one. Five Pro Tours next year instead of the normal four. Pro Tour Rivals of Ixalan, Pro Tour Dominaria, Pro Tour 25th Anniversary, Pro Tour Spaghetti, and the World Magic Cup. So four Pro Tours and the World Magic Cup, kind of like normal. But there are a few special things that are happening next year. The first one is the return of the modern Pro Tour.
Yeah,
Rivals of Ixalan in Bilbao, Spain, February 2nd to 4th of 2018 will be a modern Pro Tour. So we're coming back.
Just as we've been singing the praises of the diversity in modern, now they're bringing it back.
I mean, I'm curious to see if they'll get aggressive, but we'll see what happens.
They have already said that there will be no bannings to shake up the format.
Okay, that's good. I mean, that's huge.
You know, we had that basically with Splinter Twin being banned preemptively to make sure that people were brewing for the modern Pro Tour. And it wasn't because the card was really necessarily...
Plus, it just was staleness. Yep. So here's the one that really excites me, though. Is the 25th Anniversary Pro Tour. So there's going to be a Pro Tour team event to commemorate the 25th year of Magic. The last Pro Tour team event was in 2005 in Charleston. But now they're bringing it back for the Pro Tour.
Yeah, in Minneapolis, of all places.
In Minneapolis, Minnesota. I'm going to read pretty much all the information here about this, and we'll kind of part and parcel it afterwards.
Okay.
A return to the Team Trios Pro Tour 25th Anniversary. It's taken over a decade, but we finally brought team competition back to the Pro Tour with a special one-off event, August 3rd to the 5th, 2018. Pro Tour 25th Anniversary will be a special Team Trios Constructed Tournament that features our returned teams in the conclusion of the 2017-2018 season. Pro Tour 25th Anniversary is the fourth Pro Tour of the season. Unlike other Pro Tours, which are individual competitions, this one is a team trios competition where three players perform as a trio to compete for their share of fame and prize money. The format of the Pro Tour 25th Anniversary will be Team Trios Constructed. To compete in this format, eligible trios that compete must bring a legal standard, modern, and legacy constructed deck with them, with each player piloting one of these decks through the duration of the tournament. For this Pro Tour, there will be no limited rounds. It's Team Trios Constructed for all 3 days. All
right.
So there's a lot to unpack there. First of all, that's going to be 15 rounds of Constructed Magic, or 16 rounds. That's insanely awesome. Like, I am a huge fan of Constructed Magic. I hate limited. So, awesome.
It sucks to watch, too. It's boring to watch.
But secondly, Standard, Modern, and Legacy. They're bringing Legacy back to the Pro Tour. That's insane.
Yeah, that's a big deal.
That's going to make some Legacy cards spike.
Yeah.
Like, that announcement spiked Legacy cards, I bet. Like, let me go to MTG Goldfish real quick. Take a look. Because Goldfish tend to have those nice little graphs for us. And so I'm going to take a look at Grixis Delver, because it's a good example. And one of the most important cards is Underground Sea. So this information came out in July
This was July 19th, the organized play.
July 19th.
Yeah.
So July 17th, Underground CE was $330. July 17th, you said?
No, July 19th, this came out.
19th.
Yeah,
so Underground CE was $367.
Okay.
After the announcement, it spiked to $402, and it's kind of held steady there. So $40, that's over a 10% spike. On
yeah, that's a pretty big deal.
That's a huge spike.
Now, I also heard that there was some kind of conspiracy with Star City Games, like hiking prices of some legacy cards before this was made.
I have heard that. I heard that Star City Games bought 100K in Duel Lands before this announcement.
Did I say Underground Sea too?
I said Underground Sea. I was staring at a giant portrait of Underground Sea.
Yeah, I don't know where that ended up.
There is some shadiness if there is, if Star City had bugs in their ear or whatever. I don't know. I can't tell you. I'm not going to comment. We're here to talk less about the politics and more about the game. But if Star City did that, that's really shady, and there needs to be some investigation as to trying to regulate that. But they can't because it's a secondary market and they don't care. But for those of you that, not a big fan of standard Pro Tours, like Corey and I suck at Limited, want to play on a Pro Tour and not have to worry about it, what's the big question? How do you get there? You will be eligible to compete in this Pro Tour in a variety of different methods. Be a part of a top finishing team in the Pro Tour Team Series after Pro Tour Dominaria. That one's not going to affect us, so I'm going to scroll right by it. Top four a team Grand Prix from January 6th until May 28th, 2018. So because this is a team event, if any of your team's top eight or top four a team Grand Prix, you'll automatically get qualified for the Pro Tour. Finish top two of a regional Pro Tour qualifier or an RPTQ for PT 25th anniversary. For the round of the regional Pro Tour qualifiers tied to this event, they will be run as Team Unified Standard, which that's kind of unfortunate. I wish they would be, team the format of the Pro Tour. 30 of these tournaments will take place worldwide, and the finalists of each of them will receive an invite to Pro Tour 25th anniversary, along with airfare.
So it's just one tournament. There's no PPTQ, RPTQ.
No, there are PPTQs.
Oh, there are. Okay.
Preliminary Pro Tour qualifiers for this round will work a bit differently. The formats of these will be standard and limited, and will be individual tournaments. But the winners of a PPTQ during this round can bring any two players to compete, so long as they are not eligible to compete in our. Or they are not ineligible to compete in our PPTQs. So if you were to win a PPTQ, Corey, you could win it and say, hey, Daryl, let me go grab Nick, and we'll go play in a RPTQ. And then if we get to the finals at RPTQ, we get to go to the Pro Tour.
Gotcha. I should have just waited for that information. Thanks for sharing.
No problem.
There you go. Let's get on this Pro Tour, Daryl.
Yeah, no doubt. So the last thing is pro club status, not going to affect us. Pro club, PT Dominaria Finishers Hall of Fame. So what are the prizes? Pro Tour 25th anniversary will coincide with a special exhibition tournament, which together will award $1 million in prizes. Look for more details in September. So, there's two tournaments that are awarding $1 million in prizes.
Yeah.
So that's, something to, but they will in December or September give us more information. So that's exciting.
Yeah.
Very exciting. So Wizards is looking to step its game up in the prize payouts.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah, absolutely.
What I understand from that is the prize payout has kind of been waxing and waning lately as far as these big tournaments have gone.
For all of Wizards events, we've seen a growth in the game, but not a growth in the prize structures or real change in the prize structures. Mm-hmm. Very recently, they made a big change to GP prize structures to try and fix that. But it's been a long-standing complaint that, tournament size has ballooned and cost has ballooned.
Yeah.
But the prize structure has stayed relatively flat.
Yeah, well, that's a reasonable complaint because the entry fees for these things are ridiculously expensive. And so as they dial those things back, it's like, why?
Yeah, why am I incentivized to come to this tournament if you're going to give me less incentive?
Yeah, man, the GPs and things, like, you're paying like $100 for some of those. It's ridiculous.
Yeah. So. Yeah, GP Vegas was like $100 a shot. I didn't go, not because of the cost. I could have paid for it. I just didn't go because of other reasons. So.
Sure. Well, this is definitely interesting. I think going back to Legacy Pro Tours is going to make a lot of people really happy. I don't know that we should be super concerned about like the health of the format for in this case.
Yeah,
we talk about like what the Pro Tour does to affect like the metagame and how it can become solved after a Pro Tour. But again, we just went through the results of a team tournament this weekend, and it doesn't really tell you that much because there are so many other variables in the standard and the modern portion of it that you can't say that look at this top 8 legacy list, these must be the best decks because they just might have the best standard deck paired with them.
Yeah, of course. I am pretty excited though that Legacy is a part of the Pro Tour game. It incentivizes people to play Legacy and get excited about it. It doesn't excite me that it's going to make the cost go up, but you know, that's the one, you know, issue that I have that I would want to have them change is, you know, if you're going to bring it back and spike the price, print the cards and give it back to us. That way we're not dying to be able to get enough cards to be able to get on the Pro Tour. Cause I know that it's going to be really hard for folks that qualify for the Pro Tour that aren't sponsored to be able to get a hold of Legacy decks that they want to play. Mm-hmm. If you don't have, you know, the cards that you need or access to them, it's going to be a very trying to be able to participate in the Pro Tour.
Right. Now, Minneapolis, this is taking place in Minneapolis. Like I said, it's August 3rd through 5th, and then 2018, so it's nearly a year away. I thought it was kind of weird that it's happening in Minneapolis. You would think that the 25th anniversary Pro Tour would happen in Seattle or somewhere close to where Wizards headquarters is.
You would think it would happen at Wizards headquarters in Renton. Yes.
But this also makes a little bit of sense knowing that it is in America. It is a central time zone location, so it's going to have the greatest exposure for the biggest market, which is like America. The majority of the players are here in America. And this is like central time zone means that it's least inconvenience for the East Coasters and the West Coasters that have maybe an hour difference rather than 2 or 3 hour time zone difference to stay up and watch it. Knowing that there isn't this long, like, limited portion that you can just choose to ignore, which tends to be the case for these Pro Tours, at least in my experience, and I think that a lot of people are kind of the same way. They just tune out for the limited and tune in for the constructed portion. This is all constructed, so it's all going to be
And then there are some folks that do actually enjoy the limited, and for those folks, this is just not for them.
And that's okay. We still have that. You know, we still have that in the other Pro Tours, but I think this is a good way to do something different, and it's a good way to keep it sparse and focus on this one Pro Tour to be that one anniversary event, and that's
awesome. So honestly, I would love to see the Team Pro Tour come back, and I would love to – I mean, this is going to be overstepping, I know. I would love for them to bring back Block.
Yeah?
And that way we can have these, you know, Block, Modern, Standard, Constructed Pro Tours, and it would just be super cool. I don't know. That's just me, though. Or maybe they keep Legacy as a Pro Tour and they keep the Trios Tour. I don't know. I like this event. I want to see more of it.
Yeah, I could see Block coming back with all the push for like Frontier and stuff. There's a lot coming back. There's so much that
we've
tried to change, and we've given it like a year to like blossom, and then we're just like, stomping this out. We're going back to the old ways. Modern Pro Tour.
I could see Block coming back before Legacy stayed on the Pro Tour, but that's just me.
Yeah, probably so.
So do we want to go one more thing deep into unstable, and then we'll close the cast?
This is a quick one. Yeah, I think we better close on this set of news here. Little announcements from San Diego Comic-Con. And that means we won't get to the pessimism until next week, but I think I might just write about it because I've been meaning to do so. And then I actually was listening to the Magic Mike's cast, and they were talking about just about this exact same thing. And I've been meaning to write this article about the difference between Modo and other, you know, like digital
electronic card games,
and how they basically have this barrier to entry and the costs that you have to kind of put forward to even become invested and become a part of the game in the first place. And I think that that's a huge hindrance for new players. And I'm just kind of previewing it right now. I won't go into it, by the way.
Yep.
When we're talking about all these changes to FNM and things like that, and changing the promos to you know, kind of get some of the spikier players to stay away from those events and get some of the newer players to be encouraged to go to those things, I think they're kind of investing the resources in the wrong places in those cases, because where the new players are maybe interested in playing, it's so much easier for them to maybe just, like, pick up their computer, log on, build the deck, and they can get much more practice time in on Modo. But the way that Modo is designed right now, I feel that it's very much for the already enfranchised players who know the game and want more outlets to play the game, and it's very, very harsh and very difficult for new players to get in. Whereas there are games like Hearthstone, Eternal, that the moment you log in, they're just showering you with rewards. They're giving you tutorials that give you more and more rewards. They give you intro decks and things like that. It's super user-friendly and really, really easy to get into. The Modo experience is quite different. In fact, it's like the exact opposite of that. And so my claim here, and what I want to do a little research on, is what does that environment look like? What do the numbers look like? And there's a lot of potential for this Magic Digital Next product to really improve on that. But as a player on Modo, I feel like really frustrated with it in many ways, in a lot of times where I run out, the well runs dry. You know, I run out of points sometimes and it's like, shit, now I have to, you know, pay another $2 to play a queue. It's like, there's so much investment just to play the damn game. You've already bought the cards. Now you have to pay to play the game.
Yeah.
And that's not the case for other games that have competitive and ranked modes and things like that. In fact, they give you points every time you log in. They give you packs and cards and things like that. They incentivize you to come back. So that could be a long conversation. Just want to throw that out there. But I would like to direct your attention to the website in the next couple of days, because I want to have that conversation with everyone, because I think that that's something that maybe we can start to bring up. And you know, God forbid, we don't need another open letter to WotC, because they get one of those every 3 hours on Reddit. But I think that maybe we got to start the ball running on and get some changes made on Modo, because I am surprised that we see little complaint and little attention directed at Modo changes, like functional changes. People complain about the interface all the time. I could care less about the interface. It's just the concept. It's the philosophy of it that bugs me. And I don't think that that's talked about enough. So, anyways, on a totally different note, San Diego Comic-Con, Mero talked about Unstable, which is the new onset. He previewed a new card, and basically I have a list straight from the mothership's mouth of all of the things that we know about Unstable at this point. So first off, the set will be draftable, and while it will have humor and silver bordered, it will still represent modern Magic set and world design. I copied this from the world from the mothership, by the way, and I think it's missing a word in there.
No, it's not. It's missing a comma. Still
represent modern set
and world design. So modern Magic set design and modern Magic world design. There's not really a good place to put a comma either, based on the way the English language works, but it's trying to emphasize that modern Magic, that both the set and the world design will be emphasized.
Gotcha. There you go. Yeah, so I think that the preview card that they gave us kind of emphasizes that change and that idea, because it was Steamflogger Boss, who you remember from Future Sight. And Steamflogger Boss was a card that was like kind of like a joke card thrown into the Future Sight set, because it had something to do with like assembling contraptions.
Riggers and contraptions, yes.
And there were no riggers or contraptions in the set. And people were kind of like, well, what the hell? This is a rare. Like, I just opened a $3 pack. I got a card that really does nothing. It's 4 for a 3/3.
Yeah.
So now we've got Steamflogger Boss previewed in Unstable. And we're going to get our riggers and contraptions finally.
You want to know what the exciting part is?
What?
It means you can actually play with the silver-bordered Steamflogger Boss in Modern.
Oh, yeah, you can.
Which would just be funny to see silver-bordered cards in Modern.
You know, it's weird that they say that, but the preview that they're showing It has a black border. So, I don't know. I'm confused about that. But it also has, in the background of the text, it has, like, a grenade and some sticks of dynamite. So, I don't know what that represents, but we had the guilds in the past. And the guilds from, like, Guild Pact and from Ravnica and stuff like that, they would show the guild signs in the back of the cards. And one of the next things that they announced is that there will be 5 allied colored factions. So perhaps that's what this signifies here. And so those 5 factions, excuse me, are Order of the Widget, which is the white-blue faction, Agents of Sneak, spelled S-N-E-A-K, it's an acronym for something, which is the blue-black faction, League of Dastardly Doom, black-red faction,
Goblin Explosioneers,
red-green faction, which is undoubtedly going to be this one if that's the case, and Crossbreed Labs, white-green. So those sound like a lot of fun.
All right, I'm going to ship it and just take the League of Dastardly Doom every time because that's just the sweetest name. I don't even care.
Yeah, so knowing that they're draftable and they have 5 allied colored factions, I'm thinking that there will be a pre-release in which you get to pick one of those factions and you get a box for it. And I'm hoping that
this could be the pre-release that I go to. I don't pre-release. I could pre-release this. I could get behind the awesomeness. But
the best thing and the most important announcement about this, and the one that you've all been asking, there will be really cool lands in the set with full art. Really cool. Cooler than that.
Oh, dude, really, the thing that I saw in this that excited me the most was the fact that there's going to be a planeswalker.
Yeah, there will be a planeswalker in the set.
Is there going to be a planeswalker for each of the guilds? Or just one?
It says there will be a planeswalker.
Just man, one. I want more. I want more planeswalkers. I'm greedy.
Yeah, I wonder who it'll be.
Yeah, I don't know.
And then, yeah, it does say squirrels. There are going to be squirrels in the set. And I think... Oh, and then the last thing. There will be foil tokens in the set.
Nice. Foil tokens are great.
Yeah.
So good they're giving them out for F&M prizes.
Yes. And we won't go back there right now.
Nope. Figured I'd make the statement, you know.
But yeah, there you go. Unstable should be a lot of fun. Yeah. People are a little upset about Steamflogger Boss because it's not a funny card on its own. Like, it's not inherently funny or weird.
It's not inherently funny or weird, but when you see all the random riggers and contraptions and the BS they put around it, it's going to be hilarious.
I think it is, yeah. And yeah, it's funny because it's an inside joke because we got punked with it in the first place.
It was like
cards, like if you never knew it was in the set and you just like drafted it, you might have picked Steamflogger Boss thinking, "Oh yeah, I'm going to build a rigger deck."
Yeah. I'm going to get the riggers. And you're like, "Wait a minute, there's no riggers here."
Best case scenario, you could play Steamflogger Boss times 4. They would give each other +1/+0 in haste cuz they themselves are riggers. You could play Mirror Entity in Chameleon Colossus because they themselves are riggers. But there's no way that they can put contraptions into play. Yeah, well, they don't assemble the contraptions.
But are contraptions creatures to start with?
Yeah, I don't know. It's going to be confusing, isn't it?
I want to know. I want to know more.
I hope that they did some playtesting with that because there could be some really weird rules interactions with contraptions and what they mean with modern, knowing that this card is modern legal. And we have like you know, with Chameleon Colossus and Mirror Entity and stuff.
Yeah, if contraptions are a creature type and you put contraptions together and it's like banding again, then you get banding and modern because Steamflogger Boss is a modern legal card, and you changelings that give it banding.
Yeah.
Oh my god! Or if
you assemble a band of,
or if you like cast a nameless inversion, and because you have a crib swap in your hand, you get to also crib swap because that's how contraptions work. Like this, it could get really screwy. Or you could just like staple a crib swap to a mirror entity, so like every time it attacks you get to crib swap them. I don't know, like it could be disastrous or it could be hilarious and make me just want to build like a changeling deck and just be like 4 Steamflogger Boss, got him. Annihilator.
There are some hilarious combos like that that I don't even know if they really work at all, but there's one with, like, Experimental Kraj. Like, Experimental Kraj is a legend that can put a +1/+1 counter on a creature, and then it gets all the activated abilities of that creature. So yeah, you can basically put the card that Mycosynth Lattice, I think it is, turns all your permanents into artifacts.
Yep.
And then, like, maybe Karn or something that turns your artifacts into creatures.
Creatures, yeah.
And then you put a Planeswalker out. You turn that into an artifact, turn that artifact into a creature, put a +1/+1 counter out with Kraj, and then Kraj gets all the activated abilities, the loyalty abilities of that Planeswalker. So then basically it doesn't have the limitations of being a Planeswalker, can just activate all the loyalty abilities as much as it wants, because it just says put a +1/+1 loyalty counter on it to do this thing.
Yeah.
So I don't know if that works, but I've always understood it to work, because that's a combo.
No, and Experiment Kraj does work like that. Like, that's 100% how it works. So if you have a... So if you have a Nico Bolas Planeswalker, and you make it an artifact and turn that into a creature and then put a 1/1 counter on it, or however you make Nico Bolas Planeswalker a creature, and you put a 1/1 counter on it.
Yeah.
Experiment Kraj can just, like, ultimate Nico Bolas infinite times to your opponent. At instant speed.
That's so fun. Yeah, I mean, it works like Commander.
I wouldn't exactly call that fun, but...
It's a ridiculous way to win. It's a 5-card combo or a 4-card combo or whatever it is.
So the question is, can we Experiment Kraj faster in water?
Here, I like this one. You know Ashnod's Coupon?
Yeah.
What does that card do? I think it's like you sack it.
Target player fetches you target bird.
But what exactly does it say? Because that's relevant to this. It says, okay, it's an artifact for 0. It says, tap, sacrifice Ashnod's Coupon. Target player gets you target drink. Or rather, you pay any cost for the drink. Okay, that's part of the card. So you donate Ashnod's Coupon to a friend.
Huh?
You mindslaver them. You take their turn.
Mm-hmm.
You get the drink. And you tip them. You tip the bartender. $150. The combo is, you just made your friend tip $150. And you get a drink.
Wait,
does that work? Is that backwards? I don't remember how that one worked. Something with Ashnod's Coupon being all wonky like that. So you activate Ashnod's Coupon, then you mindslaver them. That's how that goes. You don't have to donate at all.
Yeah.
Then you go take their turn and get the drink on their turn.
If you activate Ashnod's Coupon on their turn after you mindslavered them.
Yeah, it's stupid, I know, but they better get the drink fast before you take their
turn,
before you pass.
So they just scoop in response to the mindslaver, and they move on with their day.
Then you win the game. Then the combo is just as good.
I mean, I would rather scoop to you than spend infinite dollars on a drink. Like,
this is funny that you can play a combo in the game and do something in the real world.
Yeah, it's pretty hilarious.
It is unglued, so I guess you can get around things like that.
Alright.
Anyways.
That was awesome.
We'll end on that. And
We'll end on Ashnod's Couponing, people.
Alright, we'll talk to you next time. Thanks for listening.
Take it easy.